This is Philosophy Bites with me, David Edmonds.
And me, Nigel Warburton.
Philosophy Bites is available at www.philosophybites.com.
Philosophy Bites is made in association with the Institute of Philosophy.
If determinism is true, if everything is caused, then what room is there for concepts like praise and blame? The 20th century British philosopher Peter Strawson wrote an influential article, Freedom and Resentment, in which he said that whatever the truth of determinism, attitudes like resentment and gratitude were so deeply rooted in normal human interaction that it was impossible to dispense with them. Jonathan Glover is a leading moral philosopher, interested in Strawson's claim. Recently, Professor Glover has been interviewing patients held in a high-security psychiatric hospital, their detention ordered by the courts after they committed often terrible crimes.
Jonathan Glover, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about personality disorder and morality. You're in an unusual position of having spoken to quite a few people with personality disorder. Could you say a little bit about that to start with?
Yes, I've been talking to people with antisocial personality disorder, and they're people who've committed serious crimes and are in a secure hospital. And the reason I went to talk to them was that what people say about psychopaths who are the extreme end and all the other people with the diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder, what people say about them is they lack a conscience. And that seems to me to raise more questions than it answers.
So what did you do? Were you giving them questionnaires? Was it a structured interview? What was the nature of your interaction with these people?
Well, it was what's called a semi-structured interview, which I exploited happily. I went with a set of questions to start with to investigate how they think about right and wrong. If they said anything interesting that deviated from the questions, I felt free to follow that up. I didn't want to scare them off by sort of implying that I suspected they had no conscience or anything of that sort. So I would say things like, if you were driving and had a car, would you park in the disabled space? If so, why? If not, why not? Because there's a whole range of different reasons. I would say, what would you tell your children about right and wrong? And hear what they said about that and then ask them questions.
And what sort of responses did you get? Were they quite similar?
They weren't identical. They're individual people, and I a bit suspect that the category of antisocial personality disorder really covers a multitude of different things often. But I found a number of things. One was that often they had very shallow ideas about right and wrong. I would say, well, what would you teach your children not to do? And they would say, well, not to swear, not to bully, always to let women through the door first. And I would say, well, are all these the same? Are they all equally important? Oh, yes, yes, I think so. Well, the idea that swearing is as important as bullying suggests a kind of lack of depth. I see the contrast between what they have and what other people have as not being that they lack a conscience, but they have a rather different sort of conscience, rather rigid one, not rooted in sympathy, whereas for most of us, things are much more rooted in sympathy for other people. I mean, for instance, they had strong views about fairness, on the whole about retribution. They believed in capital punishment. They thought people ought to be punished if they deserved it. But one of them, for instance, I said, what should there be capital punishment for? And he said, oh, for damaging the Queen's property. And I said, well, here we are in Broadmoor, Her Majesty's hospital or prison, whatever it is. If I set fire to one of the waste paper baskets, should I really be executed? And he said, no, I didn't mean that. I mean damaging something like Buckingham Palace, Balmoral, Windsor Castle. And it seemed to be just very authority-based, deference to the Queen as an authority. It was doing what your parents had told you to do. It was that kind of thing. It wasn't rooted in any real concern for the way in which our actions can help or harm people.
So it's more a question of law-following than imaginative engagement with other people.
Yes, it's rule-following, rule-worship, if you like, without any real thought or indeed feeling about what might reasonably underlie those rules.
Another aspect that must be relevant here is how their childhoods relate to what they became. Did you find anything interesting there?
I found things I thought very interesting. I didn't ask them about either their crime or their childhood, because I was there to ask about their thinking about morality. But often they wanted to raise both, and I always let them and followed up anything I found interesting. About their childhoods, I mean, they more or less uniformly had horrendous stories of child abuse, of emotional rejection, of neglect, of cruelty, sometimes sexual abuse, sometimes in the family, sometimes in what we laughingly call care. I was horrified by this. One of the problems of this interview project is, can I believe what they say? So I would check with the psychiatrists in Broadmoor, and they would say, yes, just about everybody here has indeed had these horrendous childhoods.
So do you think their childhoods simply caused them to do the horrible things they did in later life?
The experiences they had in childhood were a very important cause, although there's the caveat that lots of people have bad childhoods and don't end up doing the kinds of things that they do. So it's a more complicated causal story than simply having a bad childhood. It's all sorts of contingent circumstances, and it's other factors, possibly like genes. But yes, I think the fact that they were rejected meant partly that they were made to be very angry, and they sometimes took it out on other people. Partly it meant that sympathy was inhibited by a kind of defensiveness. Having been rejected themselves when they tried to have emotional relationships with families or people in childhood, they were scared. Some of them talked about putting on blinkers, hiding behind a defensive wall. And because of that, it meant they cut off emotional responses to other people. Then there was also the question about respect, because normally one of the things that inhibits us from doing terrible things to other people is a sense of respect for other people. Now, they had a shallow kind of respect. They respected the Queen, they respected the police and the army and so on. But the deep respect for other people that is involved in the deepest kind of relationships seemed to me to be missing.
So what we're talking about really is something like a natural moral development that occurs when people are socialised in conventional circumstances and something has gone terribly wrong that's made it more likely that these people are going to be capable of harming other people and not really feel bad about it.
I think that's right. And one of the things which the psychiatrist Gwen Adsett, who I worked with, said to me, I said to her, I sometimes think with talking to them that other people aren't very real to them. And she said something which at first puzzled me. She said, I sometimes think they're not very real to themselves. And I wondered what this meant. Then I think I've worked out what it might have meant. They weren't respected as children themselves by their parents. I think we learn to respect other people in a reciprocal way. And if we're not respected, we don't learn to play the game of mutual respect.
Where does that leave them in terms of their responsibility for what they have done?
Well, that's one of the really deep philosophical questions. On the one hand, if we say, whenever there's a causal story going back through childhood or genes or whatever, which means that in principle it could be predicted that they would act in this way, well, that might be true of all of us. There's a justifiable worry, I think, that thinking along the lines I'm thinking about their childhood could lead to a complete erosion of the idea of responsibility altogether. And I think that the idea that we do take important decisions, we don't just, as it were, experience life passively as a fatalist might do, is hugely important. It's also hugely important that we react to each other in emotional ways of criticism, disgust, blame and so on when people act badly. But on the other hand, if I ask myself, if I'd had a childhood like they had, can I be sure that I wouldn't have done the terrible things they did? And the honest answer is no.
Seems to me there's a tension here between saying, look, we're programmed by our past, we just have to do whatever the program has played out to make us do, and at the same time treating other people as agents, not just passive, almost robot-like creatures who just have to do what the precursors of their actions have predicted they would do. We can't have both, surely.
I think you're quite right that there is a tension, but I actually think there are important values on both sides. Now, normally, when we think about responsibility, we think, do certain excuses apply? Was this the illness or was it the person? Say somebody behaves weirdly in dementia. We think that was the illness because they weren't like that before and they never would have chosen to be like that. So we say, this person has an excuse because it's the illness. And that, as it were, leaves their character unsullied. Now, the problem with personality disorder in many cases and major psychotic disorders is that the core part of the personality has changed, so that in one way, yes, it's the person, but in another way, it's the illness that's made them like that. And I believe we have to somehow keep a bit of both sides of this. Now, I agree with you, there's a real tension between the values on both sides. If we treated everybody as a psychiatrist might treat a patient or a social worker might treat a client, the core of human relationships would disappear. There'd be a kind of impersonal detachment, which would be, I think, a human disaster. But on the other hand, we need binocular vision. We need to see it that way and to see the other perspective, that the kind of person we are may ultimately be due to many factors outside our control.
What if there is a causal explanation for everything? What if that is the correct account of the nature of human existence?
Well, I think it may well be. And then what we have to do is both, if we want to keep our human existence, go on reacting emotionally to what friends, parents, children, lovers do. Otherwise we become dehumanized robots. But at the same time, we shouldn't, in my opinion, keep retributive punishment, because that seems to me to be adding to someone's suffering simply because they did something. And there we need to bring in the other perspective and say, but surely, ultimately, it wasn't in their control. Some people are so dangerous that they need to be locked up. So we can sometimes lock people away when they've done a crime because they're a danger. We can do things to reform or to deter, but not simply to clobber people because of what they've done.
That sounds like having your cake and eating it, though, doesn't it? That you both want to say that everything has a scientific explanation, but when we get to the point where we can explain everything, we should still cling on to the traditional way of interacting with people. Why don't we become modern people and just go with the science?
Well, the cost would be very high. If a man is unfaithful to his wife, having confessed it, he might in a way expect her to be angry, resentful, jealous. If she says, no, no, I've been reading my philosophy and my science, I very much regret the fact this happened, because I don't blame you, I see this as just part of the unfolding of the great scheme of the universe. If that happened, I think the person would feel that he wasn't being treated fully as her equal, fully as a human being. The fact that the character and the choice had a causal explanation so they were predictable needs to be borne in mind. But it would be, in my opinion, a human disaster if we allowed it to eliminate these reactions.
Jonathan Glover, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's now a Philosophy Bites book published by Oxford University Press. For more information, go to www.philosophybites.com.
For more information about the Institute, go to www.philosophy.sas.ac.uk.